Okay, so as you can probably tell, there are a lot of reasons why we found this to be an interesting film, especially in pointing out our own miseducations in the trajectory of the sex ed film. So, firstly, and most notable, is that the film is in no way affiliated with an institution and that it was independently produced. So, this places it outside the realm of a lot of the other films we've seen at the conference thus far. So it is indeed an orphan. As well, it becomes quite apparent that this film is a far cry from teaching women to be ashamed and incapacitated by their menstrual cycles. The film opens a very frank dialogue about the pragmatic and day-to-day issues of being a woman who menstruates. First off, we note that the problem of the film's protagonist is neither a boy nor really her period. It's that she hasn't yet gotten her period. Shortly after the start of the film, though, Judy Marston is confronted with her first cycle at the age of 15. While this topic is not out of character for a sex ed film, the manner in which it is handled certainly is. This film is made by a woman for women. This is most apparent in scenes where Judy deals with the pragmatics of discreetly disposing of her pad, in dealing with a feisty tampon, when she talks frankly without shame to her male friend about the issues of her first period, as she gets advice from other women, not male doctors, on using tampons and relieving the pain of cramps. And later in the film, in a part that we weren't able to show, when Judy visits a drugstore to purchase tampons and is taught by a female pharmacist about the wide array of products available to her. Indeed, Judy has a choice in how she wants to handle this new part of her life, and she is taught not to be ashamed of it. In fact, as you would see toward the end of the film, she is even empowered and more comfortable with her body. Overall, the film gives the sense that the viewer is getting privy advice on menstruation, as opposed to the clinical and sterile views given by other socially regressive sex ed films. Just as social morals and values enforced on youth after World War II are reflected in a good majority of sex ed films of that era, the social climate of the late 1960s and early 1970s surfaces in this film. The influence of the women's liberation movement, the counterculture, and various other forms of social agitation are quite apparent here, thus pointing us to acknowledge that this cultural document, now placed in the archive, goes beyond its original pedagogical purpose. In particular, when compared to other manifestations of the sex ed genre, we can clearly see a shift in American views of sex, femininity, gender roles, education, and handling and influence of youth. And this is quite pertinent to a number of scholarly fields. So Chris is going to finish talking about that.
So, by all accounts, this film holds importance beyond just the realm of film and media studies. Why then should this film wait in the archive for a film studies scholar to perchance stumble across it in research when it holds such value for so many other disciplines? Traditional paper archives provide access to a variety of users and researchers from different areas of study. Why then can't moving image archives do the same? Film and video archives should not just be limited to those interested in studying film, video, and new media. They should instead be invested and active in providing and promoting access to all forms of research so as to make moving image archives just as relevant as traditional paper and manuscript archives. The challenge in providing access to orphan films is thus magnified. These are films already lacking any popular awareness and are sometimes viewed as dated documents that have little academic relevance. While it is obvious to us that the films shown at the symposium this week are very important, right now, the majority of scholars and researchers do not even know that these films exist. We have the privilege to be in a room filled with enlightened people aware of the relevance of these films, but do they not also have relevance outside the realms of critical theory? Before embarking on our trip out here, I was talking about our presentation at UCLA to one of my colleagues, and out of pure coincidence, a graduate student from the Department of Education who overheard my conversation came up to me and told me she's writing her thesis on trends in sex education and would have loved to incorporate sex ed films in her research, but unfortunately, she didn't know where to go find any. This is a prime example as to why archivists need to start to become advocates for their collections, not just in the film studies community, but also outside in various other forms of research and scholarship. There are lots of articles, books, theses, dissertations just waiting to be written on these kinds of moving images outside of film and media. The only people that are going to make these films known are archivists, who have now have to view their job not just as custodians to collecting, preserving, and providing access, but also as promoters to create this awareness. So how should archivists go about marketing orphan films? Well, we've already mentioned successful examples in the realms of DVD with AV Geeks and online access with the Prelinger Archives. But what should smaller archives with limited budgets, like the USC Moving Image Archive, do to provide active access? Is it an archivist's job to become an activist for the use of collections? Well, we did not come to this conference with these answers, but we're proposing that this is an excellent audience and an excellent group of people that can come up with some really terrific solutions. The field guide, obviously, that Rick has presented is an excellent first step. And the discussion after the presentation yesterday proves that we have many dedicated people present here today to ensure that all forms of industrial, institutional, and educational films are accounted for. Linda's film on menstruation appears to indeed be an anomaly. However, it only remains as one until we begin to investigate further into these forms of educational films. This artifact is just a singular example in the shift in trends in sex ed films, as well as the ebb and flow in our overall perceptions of our own sexual history. Perhaps this film gains increasing importance today as discourses questioning gender and sexuality in our society are brought to the forefront. And as we witness shifts in our own sexual morals, the lack of awareness of our own sexual history and where these ideas are being formed brings urgency for the splicing together of the history of sex ed films. As well, piecing together the lost histories of a wide variety of orphan films creates the necessary awareness to opening the vaults to an entirely new audience. And with this new audience brings the potential of new funders, which in turn can aid future preservation efforts. Thank you so much.